Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Andrea Lorien, one of the producers on the show, and what you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. Today is the fourth and final installment of our weekly September series, School Stories, all about issues facing Vermont's education system. We've talked about school consolidation and closures, behavioral issues and high-need students, phone policies and social media dependence. We've talked to students, teachers, administrators, lawmakers, school consultants, and doctors. We'll round off our series at the end of today's show with a chat about high school sports. But first, this hour, we are joined by Vermont's Interim Secretary of Education, Zoe Saunders. She was appointed to the position by Governor Phil Scott in April. Before moving to Vermont, she served as an administrator for a school district in Florida and a strategist for a charter school management company. Secretary Zoe Saunders, welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you here with us today. And listeners, we are glad to have you as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts this hour. If you're a parent, what are your education concerns? If you work in education, what supports do you need? Now is the time to make your voice heard with Vermont's top education official. You can call in at 800-639-2211 or email us to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. So, Secretary Saunders, you have been in your role for about 6 months now, and you've been traveling the state as part of what you've called a listen and learn tour. What have you been most surprised to learn about our school system here in Vermont?
Thank you for the question. I thought it was really important as a new leader to the state that I ground my understanding in our education system by traveling all over the state of Vermont. I'm actually joining you today from Bennington in the Southwest Vermont Supervisory Union, where we just concluded a regional planning session with our education leaders in this part of the state. These sessions have been really informative and are critical for me as a leader of the agency to ensure that we are aligning our services and support and initiatives to meet the educational priorities of communities across Vermont. What stands out to me in Vermont is the high level of dedication and commitment to our education system. There is a profound sense of duty to be able to invest in the future generation. And it's really such a source of pride for me to be in this role at the agency and working in a state that cares so deeply and is so passionate about education.
What have you been most surprised to learn about our school system?
I think the school system is very complex in the state of Vermont, and so it's really important that understanding that complexity and the regional nuances, and while there is a lot of variability across the state, I actually think there's a really common sense and understanding around the importance of education, and that continues to inspire me and I think is a strong motivator and a really big asset for our state as we're continuing to build upon the things that are working really well and also looking for opportunities in order to improve upon our educational system.
What are some of those regional differences that you've noticed? Are you speaking to the like rural-urban divide?
Thank you for the question. So there's a lot of differences that we're looking at. So as the agency is developing our strategic plan, we identified three emerging priorities, and we're working with the regions to understand both the barriers and challenges of achieving performance in those key areas. So one is looking to promote improved academic performance in literacy and math. Another area of focus is expanding college and career readiness. And a third is how do we support the mental health needs of our students. An overarching theme in exploring all of these areas is how we can sustain and provide resources from a budgeting perspective, and that is part of a broader conversation. In terms of regional nuances, as we think about communities, there's different assets that each community has across the state of Vermont, and it's been really wonderful to hear about how those community partnerships are formed in order to support our schools in meeting the needs of students. Also, there are parts of our state where there aren't as many community resources. And so that can present different challenges. Here in Bennington today, we were talking about the increased mental health needs of our students and the difference in terms of access to different supports and thinking intentionally about how we can really define the need for our students and identify ways in which we can promote that greater coordination between school and community resources to support the overall needs of our students.
Well, that brings me to our first question from a listener. And if you're out there listening to our conversation with Interim Education Secretary Zoe Saunders and have questions for her about her work at the Department of the Agency of Education, or thoughts about your own school system in your community, give us a call. 800-639-2211 is our number. You can also email vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Ahead of today's show, we got an email from Dan in Jericho, who wrote in with this question. What is your understanding of how Vermont supports students with disabilities? And what is your vision for creating a more inclusive experience while increasing efficiency and value in providing services and supports for students with disabilities?
Thank you for that question. And it's an area that we are focusing on the agency. You know, as part of our Listen and Learn tour, we are really digging into very specific content areas to understand all the different components and facets of our public education system. And special education is an area that we are delving into deeply and really trying to be able to document how we're currently delivering on our special education services and ensuring that every student across the state of Vermont and every school and every classroom is be able to benefit from the services and support that they need and that they are entitled to. And so part of that is really understanding how we can provide additional, you know, wraparound support for those students and also how we can provide support to the field as it relates to ensuring the delivery of that. From a broader perspective, we do know that we have some shortages in terms of teacher shortages. The Agency of Education is looking at ways in which we can provide alternate pathways through provisional licensing and also specifically for special education teachers as well to make sure that we have the staff in place with the appropriate training and support to meet the needs of our students.
Mm. Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the teacher shortages. This isn't a situation that's unique to Vermont. There is a nationwide teacher shortage. And it's often more acute in rural districts, of which there are many in Vermont. Now, the state recently has been trying to make it easier and cheaper to get a teaching license, and the Agency of Education has doubled the number of provisional and emergency licenses that it's granted. Those are essentially granted when districts can't find a licensed candidate. It's a way to get folks in who might not have all of the regular licensing in place. They've doubled the number of these licenses that it's issued in recent years. Do you have any concerns about that increase, or is this, you know, just the state doing what it needs to do to make sure that there are, you know, as many qualified adults as possible in these classrooms?
Yeah. So we talk about teacher shortages, it's important to contextualize that. So as you noted, nationally, there's a broader trend here. We are seeing fewer people going into teacher preparation programs. At a statewide level, there are some other trends that are impacting the workforce shortage as well, including the cost of housing and the cost of living in the state of Vermont. And then also, as we look at teacher salaries, we can think about how we can increase those. Right? So for Vermont being one of the highest spenders on education, I think there's an opportunity for us to actually be able to pay our teachers more and be leaders in that space as
would
well.
Would that mean reallocating funds from a different area of education budgets?
As we think about all of these conversations with budget, we have limited resources. And it's important for us to evaluate how we're reinvesting those resources in ways that are going to be most impactful for teaching and learning. doing. And certainly teacher salaries are a big component of that. I hear from many principals and superintendents the challenges that they have in recruiting teachers and retaining teachers. And certainly salary is a component. Also, as we look at trends across the state, we see that our smaller supervisory unions tend to serve students with higher needs as a measure of those students that qualify for free and reduced lunch, and also students that receive special education services. And yet those same smaller supervisory unions tend to pay teachers less. That's a lot of a factor regarding budget restrictions. So that creates an equity challenge, and it creates some real and present operational concerns for superintendents and principals in terms of recruiting teachers as well.
So what exactly would need to happen, just for a layperson outside of the education system, what exactly would need to happen for one of these districts that you're talking about to raise teacher pay?
So when we think about our overall expenses in education, certainly salaries are a big component of that. There's also a lot of other costs related to buildings and programming and things of that nature. And as we're really analyzing how we are investing and spending, it's important for us to really ensure that those dollars are being really maximized in those areas that have the biggest impact. So part of the work that we're doing next in our series of reporting is actually to do a deeper dive into budget so that we have a greater clarity around how we're actually investing our dollars and where there are opportunities for us to think about reinvesting so that those, we could increase salaries. We could look at, there's a lot of deferred maintenance and challenges at many of our buildings. And so things like that are all part of that conversation as we think about how do we place funding where it's going to be best served to meet the needs of students.
Well, let's go to the phones here. We have a call coming in from Drew in Moortown. Drew, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I want to preface this by saying I mean no disrespect, but the confirmation process for the secretary was obviously problematic. I felt like our legislature spoke pretty clearly in not thinking that Ms. Saunders was the right person for the role, and I'm wondering if she views the sort of indefinite interim appointment that she's received from Governor Scott is problematic.
Thank you, Drew. And a bit more context for listeners. So after Secretary Saunders, our guest today, was appointed by Governor Phil Scott in April, the state Senate voted down that confirmation. And then immediately after, Governor Scott appointed you, Secretary Saunders, to this role in an interim capacity, which his office says does not require Senate approval. And now two state senators have filed a lawsuit alleging that Governor Scott purposefully circumvented the Senate's constitutional authority by reappointing you as interim secretary. As I understand it, there could be some updates to that lawsuit this week. Secretary Saunders, is your appointment in this interim capacity, does that first hamper your ability to do your job?
Yeah. So thank you for that question. I think no job is ever guaranteed, right? I mean, you really have to be able to take a role and be able to do your best to make the biggest impact that you can. Certainly, my confirmation process was not what I had expected. I think there was also a lot of misinformation around my background and experience and training that I bring to the role. And the governor did ask me to stay on to be able to provide some important stabilization work for the agency and to continue to move forward on the work that is needed in the state, which I'm approaching in a way that's very focused on ground up, right? It's really making sure that the agency of education is in a position to best meet the needs of the field. And that means that as an agency, we need to be more deeply embedded and engaged with the work of our education leaders. To that end, I've designed the Listen and Learn Tour to really support that level of engagement and being able to work in a very concerted way with our education leaders. So that includes bringing together working groups of superintendents and principals and curriculum directors and business managers, special education directors, also teachers to really understand what's working well in terms of the type of support that the Agency of Education is providing now, and what are things that we really need to be able to improve in order to support our supervisor unions, our schools, and our education leaders in really elevating our public education system. And as part of that work, it's really exciting to see what's really working well and what makes Vermont stand out as a really unique and special place to raise a child and to receive your education. And at the agency, we have a unique statewide view where we're able to see some of those incredible and promising practices and be able to share how we can scale that work across communities in Vermont. I'm continue to stay very focused on the work and making sure that the agency is being very responsive to the needs of the field. We've heard a couple key things that we need to improve on as an organization, and I'm really proud of the talented and dedicated professionals at the agency for really stepping up in big and measurable ways to address that need. So a couple key areas and things we have heard is a need for the agency to improve data access and reporting. And so we're starting to submit a series of data reports to that end to provide a greater understanding of our education system.
Secretary, before you continue on the nurse, I'm so sorry to jump in, but I want to make sure we close the loop around your appointment and this lawsuit, which is pending right now, because the lawsuit asks the court to declare that you haven't validly functioned as secretary since your first day on the job at the end of April, which would render any official actions you've taken since then null and void. And it sounds like you're doing this listening tour. You have lots of ideas and plans and excitement around ways to improve Vermont's education system. But is it still possible to move forward with those when there is this chance that the courts could render your actions as secretary null and void?
I can't speak to any active litigation. I can only speak to what I've been asked to fulfill in terms of this role. And I'm very committed to this work. I'm committed to supporting Vermont and really helping to really amplify what's working well within our education system and be of support as we're looking for opportunities for improvement and really being dedicated to doing that in a way that is giving voice and recognition to the needs of the field. And that means listening to our superintendents and principals and teachers and listening to our community members around those educational priorities and how the agency can best support that work. The agency's work is bigger than one person. And I've been really intentional around building team and ensuring that there's that engagement. I think the important part of this work is that it takes collective action. It takes the agency being in partnership with our communities and with our supervisor unions and districts across the state to be able to fulfill our responsibility to students, which is to ensure that every single child in Vermont has a substantially equal access to education. And that's what we're all working towards together.
Let's jump back into the phone lines. We have Michael in Waitsfield on the line. Michael, go ahead.
Hi, good morning. So this question is really all over the United States, but I'm specifically talking about Vermont. I understand Vermont has 17 underutilized vocational schools, and I don't understand it. I haven't heard one talk about vocational schools since you've had this conversation on the air. I've only heard about academic institutions, and one of the reasons I think is there's no prestige in going to these vocational schools, which I can't understand because as we know, all these tradespeople make a lot of money, and they're very important. And you really can't even get them because they're so busy.
Yeah, Michael, thank you for the call. Let's talk for a moment here about Vermont's vocational and trade schools. Secretary Saunders, what have you been hearing about the importance of these schools in our education system on this learning tour that you're on?
Expanding college and career readiness is a strategic focus of the agency's work, and we're getting a lot of feedback through our Listen and Learn tour about how to increase those pathways. I have a background in doing a lot of work in workforce development and technical training programs, and believe that they offer an incredible pathway to meaningful and high-paying careers right out of high school. I've done a lot of work in engaging with our career and technical centers, and actually we'll be meeting with with the Career and Technical Education Directors later this week to understand how we can do just that, to be able to promote greater opportunity for students to explore the trades. It's really encouraging when we see graduation rate data for those that are enrolled in career and technical education is very high. And that shows, I think, that that purpose-driven educational environment is really motivating for students because it's very applicable. They're really applying their learning to a trade that will help turn into their career shortly after high school. We also are engaging in work with our State Board of Education around how we can modernize our current rules to bring them up to standard and be able in that pathway promote greater opportunities for students. I think that another area is we're investing in a grant program right now to be able to equip our career and technical education centers with the equipment that they need to be able to either expand programs or to offer new programs. And that work needs to happen in coordination with an understanding of the industry needs and the workforce needs in Vermont. The Vermont Futures Project estimated that we have a 10,000 person workforce shortage. So it's important that we understand where those shortages exist in terms of industry and sector so that we're aligning our programs in ways that are helping to prepare our workforce in Vermont, which is really critical to drive our economy.
Thanks, Michael, for your call. Let's go down to Brattleboro with Prudence. Prudence, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks. Are you willing to commit to never proposing or pushing charter schools as a solution for Vermont's educational challenges? And by pushing, I mean never having behind-the-scenes talks with your former employer, the for-profit Charter Schools USA, or any political operatives who are proficient at creating false grassroots movements?
Thank you, Prudence. Secretary Saunders, can you speak to charter schools and whether you think they'd be a fit in Vermont?
I've said from the beginning that I don't see charter schools being a fit for Vermont. Charter schools, come in when you have a certain enrollment size where it makes sense and also where communities want them to be situated. Vermont is really structured in a way where there's a lot of local engagement in our schools, which is really important and incredible to have success of our public education system. I've said from the beginning, I don't think that's a fit here. I think what we need to be having conversations around is how we are strengthening our public education system, looking at the strengths of that and building upon, I think, what's really unique and special about Vermont is the high level of engagement and support and commitment to our public schools.
Hmm. Well, thank you, Prudence, for your call. I want to dive into a topic that has come up again and again in Vermont Public Citizens Agenda approach to our election coverage, where we've invited people over the course of this past year to tell us what they want to hear talked about this election season. And the cost of our education system comes up again and again. And one theme that I've noticed here, Secretary Saunders, is that there's this either perceived or real disconnect between the high cost per pupil in Vermont and educational outcomes here. I mean, Vermont is fifth in terms of total expenditures per pupil, according to a report from your office. And we rate highly for reading and about in the middle of the pack for math. So I'm curious, do you see evidence of this perceived disconnect between the amount we're spending on each student and the educational outcomes?
That's the work that we're engaged in collectively, both the agency in the field and the broader Commission on the Future of Public Education, is how do we develop a system that is promoting high quality and is equitable at a rate that we can afford. So part of the report that we released last month was looking at statewide trends. And as I shared earlier, it is challenging for many of our smaller supervisory unions to be able to meet the full needs of their students, and they tend to serve those students that have higher needs in terms of higher poverty rates and so forth. So as we go into these conversations, it's really important for us to think about this, as I've said from the beginning, in three areas, really looking at educational quality, equity, and affordability and sustainability of our system. And so as we engage in these conversations, we need to be able to center students' needs around these decisions and thinking about how are we organizing the limited resources that we have in a way that are giving students equitable opportunities.
Could you give an example of how we could do that better? About how this affordability question, I think we all agree that it's an issue. Do you have any specific ideas on how to make our education system more affordable or cut costs at schools if needed?
Yeah. I think when we talk about affordability, it's also important to talk about educational equity. And because we have some real challenges with affordability, that is manifesting in an equitable system. So we have schools that are able to offer a range of programs and electives for students and others that are not simply because of budget constraints. And so as we think about practical ways to ensure that every child has those equal opportunities, we can think about sharing resources. We can think about, really implementing programming in different ways. We can think about how we can try to manage some of those costs, statewide drivers of cost.
What about closing schools?
So I think there's been, over the many years, Vermont has had conversations around consolidation and when does that make sense? And as part of the engagement I'm having with the field, education leaders and school board members are having those conversations organically and thinking about where that might make sense and where that might not make sense. And I think it's part of the conversation. Certainly there are examples in the state where it made sense to consolidate. And the student experience is that those students now have opportunity to other programs, and they're able to join a sports team or participate in band in ways that they might not have been able to do if the schools didn't consolidate. So in some instances, I think it can be a tool that is considered, but it needs to be thought of in a very methodical and data-driven way. And also need to articulate with those changes how it's going to improve the student experience. Change just for change's sake isn't what we're driving towards. It's thinking about ways in which we can improve the system that result in measurable improvement for students, both in terms of access to educational programs and also outcomes in terms of their overall proficiency, graduation rates, and ability to pursue their desired college or career options after high school. Hmm.
Well, relatedly, we got an email from a listener named John in Stratford who writes, Vermont is among the top spenders for education in the country, and we've pretty much reached the limit of what taxpayers are willing to spend. While we have consolidated schools, we have not yet considered further consolidating administrative costs. Currently, there are 52 supervisory unions serving students in Vermont. Do you feel there could be some savings made by consolidating some of these administrative units?
So we're looking at the data. We have shared that Vermont does have a high rate of administrators per 100 students and also a high number of teachers per 100 students. We're actually top in that category as we look at national comparisons. So as we engage in these conversations, certainly there's an opportunity for us to organize our system in a way that's going to be most effective. And in some cases, there are already shared administrative responsibilities across districts that could be modeled. And those are things that we're beginning to look at as we think about what are some concrete solutions for us as a state to really create a system that is going to be efficient and sustainable in at a rate that taxpayers can afford.
Mm. Let's take another caller here. We have Matthew in Alberg calling in. Matthew, go ahead.
Yeah, greetings. There's emerging AI technology out there. How can we integrate Vermont's systems, aging, let's call it the level what it is, Vermont systems like 100-year-old, and we still have not yet updated. How can we use AI emerging technologies to help quantify the data so our legislators, our policymakers, can be informed on their decision in the next, legislative biennium so they can clear consciously vote?
Mm. Thank you, Matthew. So I think the question here is not about the use of AI in schools or in classrooms, but how agencies like the Agency of Education could use artificial intelligence to help with making decisions about our complex education system. Secretary Saunders?
think there are definitely opportunities for us to make improvements to our data collection and data analytical tools in the state. We tend to operate with very rudimentary tools. Part of what the agency is engaged in now through our Listen and Learn tour is to identify how we can improve upon data access and data reporting. And this work really is a collective effort right now where we're identifying, certainly there are opportunities for us to think about how we can collect data differently in a way that is more efficient and more accurate, and how we can leverage additional tools to analyze that information to inform policy decisions. It is certainly important that the agency is able to collect this information and share that with the General Assembly as they're contemplating changes. I think also important to this work as we analyze data is making sure that we're contextualizing that. And by that, I mean understanding how certain policy recommendations would actually be implemented in the field. And that's why we need to take a balanced approach of looking at the quantitative data, which is really going to be able to drive a lot of our decision making, but also the qualitative data and understanding of how things are working in practice in communities across the state, so that as an agency, we're able to make recommendations that are supported by research, supported by data, and really are in consideration of what can be implemented in a way that will be effective and achieve those desired and intended outcomes.
Now, Secretary Saunders, you sit on the Commission on the Future of Public Education. It's quite the name. And this commission Yes. is expected to submit a set of short-term recommendations for curtailing costs in our education system by this December. So that's before the next legislative session starts in January. But given that schools are already well into their budget development process and how complex the education system is, as we've discussed, how much relief realistically do you think the commission's ideas could provide for schools this budget cycle?
I think there's two components to this. One is the Commission on the Future of Public Education, their work, and then some work we're doing around the agency's strategic plan. So the Commission on the Future of Public Education is charged to make, you know, broad systemic recommendations around how to organize our educational system in a way that can be sustainable moving forward. To your point, the commission is charged with making short-term recommendations for this cycle. The agency's part of that work is being able to bring in some additional data to kind of guide the analysis and to think about the implication of some of those short-term cost containment strategies and making sure that we're always being mindful of how those strategies will implement educational opportunities for our students. I expect that we will see a set of short-term recommendations to be considered along with medium and long-term recommendations and consideration of rollout plan to make sure that things are implemented in a way that can be kind of ingested within our system.
Any chance you could give us a sense of the kind of short-term reforms that you are pushing the state to explore in your role on this commission?
Yeah, so in my role on the commission, it's really being able to bring, you know, ground these conversations in data, evidence, and fact in comparisons around what other tools have been used across the country. I think the reality is there's a very short list of strategies that can be deployed, and all of them are very challenging. And so what we need to really think about is, you know, how do we look at those opportunities that we might consider as cost containment and marry those strategies with the strategies that are in the best interest of students in terms of educational quality. And I think it's we're going to really need to be intentional around creating that overlap. Right now, we do have an inequitable system. And so we need to be able to make some changes to ensure that every child has access to the educational opportunities that they deserve. And that requires some really difficult decisions. We need to think about how we can establish some guardrails for that work and be able to provide support to implementing them in a way that will actually achieve those desired goals of improving opportunities for students.
Lastly, Secretary Saunders, you've been on the job for about 6 months now. You've been on this Listen and Learn tour around the state. I'm wondering if you could tell us about a recent conversation or a specific interaction with a child in our public education system that elucidated something important for you about Vermont's education system.
That's a great question. And some of the work that we're doing, so we've actually engaged students in giving feedback on school safety considerations. So we've had focus groups over the summer to really help to articulate that experience from a student perspective. We're excited we'll be able to share some of what we've learned at our upcoming school safety conference on Monday. And I think that information is really important as we think about how to implement strategies that safeguard our schools and also are really supportive of the overall student experience. So that's one example around how the agency is really engaging in the field and connecting with students. I also have the opportunity to sit on the State Board of Education and have had really wonderful and engaging conversations, actually just most recently a couple weeks ago, with two of our student representatives. And it's always important for me to hear about how certain policies are being implemented in their school. And they talked about the variability with policies related to cell phones and school safety practices, and also just the joyful opportunities that they have to engage in other extracurricular programs. One thing that I heard is sometimes students aren't aware of the different programs they can take advantage of in the summer and after school. And so there's an opportunity for us to really think about how we can help promote those opportunities to students and ensure that they can take advantage of all of the great things that our schools have to offer and also our community partners have to offer as it relates to positive youth development programs.
Hmm. Zoe Saunders is the Interim Secretary of Education at Vermont's Agency of Education. Secretary Saunders, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.